Adrian.
And this is Ethan.
And this is Whiskey and Wires, brought to you by Intuitive Networks, where we talk all things tech.
And all things whiskey.
What's up, everybody? We are back in studio with the illustrious Ethan and the amazing Adrian.
You know, I'll take the amazing. I think that's a good one, but illustrious.
I'm a
little jealous of that.
Do you want me to redo that?
No, I feel good about it. I can be illustrious.
Because you got today. The illustrious.
I can do that today.
So I should have gone amazing? Or wait, you took the amazing.
Yeah, amazing. I'll take both.
You're going to take whatever I damn well give you. Oh, man. And I am Tyler here. We are super juiced to be hanging out with y'all. Thank you guys for taking some time while you're driving or doing whatever to talk to us. Tech heads and whiskey drinkers. We are currently sitting in front of a desk with some Calmonet. Sorry, I don't know how to say that. Calmonet?
I think it's Calumet.
Calumet Farm Kentucky Bourbon Whiskey. Now, for those of you that have never had Calumet Farms, neither are we. And if you know it, don't yell at us in the comments or send us hate mail, because that's just what we're going to say.
It's
done good. Fair
it's
enough.
Somewhere. Yeah. It's probably somewhere between your fancy and your Calumet.
The Calumet Farm. So today, we're excited. We're excited. We're kind of jazzed. Actually, this is kind of a lesson because I'll be straight up honest. This one I do not know much about. So y'all gonna take in the lead. But we are gonna be talking IRS code and what y'all should be doing in the finance space, because you deal with everybody's money. Did I say that right? What is it called? The IRS code. What is it?
It's the publication 4557. So
sounds very official.
It is
super official.
It is very official. It's a very good baseline. I actually use this baseline for a lot of our non-finance folks as well.
Mm.
Just because from when it comes to security, if you want to be really secure, just hopping on something like this or HIPAA.
Yeah,
it sets up a good secure baseline because these guys obviously know what they're talking about.
Who, the IRS?
I mean,
are you sure?
When it comes to some stuff,
oh, it's,
right?
Yeah, but like you need to give me all the money. That's what they know.
Yeah, well,
then they make up their own tax law. Yeah, I'm talking to you, IRS. Sorry, don't get me on. These guys got me all fired up before we hit record.
We very much support the federal government in all aspects.
Yeah, yeah, we
you doing shots over there?
We support our fearless leaders everywhere that they may be.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of background here. We had a little bit of tech issues getting on, so we've been talking politics and all the good stuff for about the last half hour. So if there's a little bit of cynicism in our voice and a little bit of frustration as we drink this bourbon, you know why.
Yes, that is 100% true. But so here's what brought up today's recording, like what we want to talk about. So this goes out to everybody that is in all the companies that are in the finance space, CPAs, financial advisors, financial planners, accountants, bookkeepers, everybody in there. They have to have some level of IT, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they got to secure all credit card information, taxes, socials, everything.
It didn't used to be like that. There were a lot of firms that did run just purely paper.
Just wild, wild west.
Like, yeah, but that is changing. Like we work with a lot of financial institutions, and mm-hmm. I don't think that any of them really use the paper system that much at all anymore.
Yeah, I think the only ones that still use it to some capacity are like car dealerships.
Sure, sure.
Use what, paper?
Paper applications and stuff like that.
Oh.
You just have to sign via paper with like the dot matrix, like the 1980s style. Paper.
Sure, sure.
Oh, with a big long one, you get the real long contract, yeah. Whatever. Okay, gotcha.
For like three or four copies.
Yeah.
They still do that.
Yeah, I know. Leases, whatever. They really could speed that up. Girls are just going to be archaic.
Yeah.
Ooh, that would be a good show or a couple series about the auto industry.
That could be
doing
fun.
Some managed IT stuff.
Yeah,
for...
Yeah.
All right. Well, so, okay. So, yeah. Note to self. I'm going to go ahead and set some time aside to research that one. Okay. So let's talk about, well, before we'll get in the just call it the colostomy farm.
Calumet.
Okay. So we're going to talk about that. And then tell us about Calumet Farms.
It's either Calumet, or if you want to be like uppity about it, you can say Calumet.
Calumet.
Which is probably what it's from. I don't know. But
and it's a Kentucky bourbon.
It's a Kentucky Street bourbon.
It's kind of popular now, like the past few years. Like their 14-15 is considered one of those like ghost bottles or like the unicorns you want to try to find.
Mm.
People pay way more over like than retail for them.
That's what this is?
No, this is a 12-year. Still, you know, fairly. This is a fairly good bottle, actually. It's actually quite a good bottle. 12-year, you know, for bourbon, that's a long time. Like 14 and 15. I've had the 14 recently, and that's get the Pappies. This is like tons of oak.
I think we should cheers on this one for this show. Boom, boom, boom. Did you get this in Kentucky? Did you bring it back, or did you roll on over to the local big box?
Actually, a really good buddy of mine gave it to me for my birthday a few years back.
Mm. Mm. Yummy. That is actually very smooth.
Did you taste that oak, though?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, no joke.
Wow.
The last one we had, it could punch you in the throat.
Yeah, yeah. Most of the time, I don't like bourbons, particularly over like 10 years, but this one's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it weird to think we're drinking poison? And just enjoying it. Like the way that like your body processes an alcohol, right? It's just like, oh, this like Drano is amazing.
I mean, everything that's good is gonna kill you. I mean, do I like, you know, devouring a ribeye with all that fat in it?
Yeah. Do I like shooting guns? Yup.
Yeah.
Ribeye, yup. Bourbon, yup. Less taxes? Yup. See, here we go.
Just live life, you know. Live life aggressively.
If anyone was...
I think that's got to be an action sport brand's logo somewhere. Live life aggressively. Okay, so let's get into this. Tell us a little bit, Ethan, about the applications that you guys have implemented with some clients and, you know, why it's important within the finance space.
Yeah, sure. So the big thing about 557...
that sounds like a round.
It does, actually. The big thing about publication 4557, as put out by the IRS, is that it is a checklisted, just fully, gosh, it's hard to explain. It's just a fully,
like a checklist that they say you have to do.
So it's a checklist of things that they recommend you do, and I use recommend very tongue-in-cheek, because if you don't do it, you can get in trouble.
Yeah, right.
But it's the recommended actions that's a baseline for your security. So it goes through every comprehensive. That is the word that I was looking for.
Comprehensive. We had some whiskey, everybody. Yeah, just before. Some bourbon, I should
that
say.
That half hour waiting was a long half hour.
I know that's a big word for you, too, so congratulations on that.
Calumet.
it's a comprehensive list. So it goes over kind of three big aspects. It goes over physical security standards, cybersecurity standards, and also personnel security.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it goes over everything from, you know, lock the doors when you leave, make sure that you don't leave your computer in the car unlocked and unattended.
Your password is on crayon over there on the
fridge. Make sure you and Lucy down the hall don't have the same password, and that password just so happens to be welcome 123. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes over those sort of aspects, but it also goes over, hey, make sure that you do background checks on your people. If they don't need background checks, they're at least credited, like CPAs and things like that. In order to get their CPA, they need to have a certain level of credation. And so it's some of those things kind of fall hand in hand.
Yeah.
But it also goes over, make sure your guys are trained and, you know, make sure that they understand phishing schemes. And so it really is... It's only like 22 pages total, including
cover. Only? Right. An IRS publication, only 22?
But that includes cover sheet and glossary and everything like that.
Some IRS person wrote this in the bathroom at 22 pages.
Well,
sits down to get rid of a sandwich. It's like, I gotta rewrite something.
I mean, for an intelligence agency...
intelligence agency, I like how you put that.
I mean, it is, though. Like, that's more my background show, and I try to be nice to the IRS.
Yeah, I don't want to mess with that. Sorry.
Right. But for an intelligence agency, 22 pages really isn't that bad when it's giving a comprehensive look. And so the way that it looks at it, it's got a few pages that are just the, you know, bare bones explanations, introductions, and everything. And then there's checklists.
Yeah. Which are helpful.
It is. It's incredibly helpful, especially for us as an MSP, because I can just go and check.
And it's easy.
Yeah. It's just making sure that everything's good.
So because we're not or not doing the background and all those things. I mean, particularly for the managed service providers and yep. those businesses that are listening, right? So what is it, what are some of the items, and I don't know if you have it in front of you, you could kind of read, but do you take like potential clients or your existing and say, hey, we have to abide by this and then just kind of break it all down?
Yeah. So actually we're working with a financial institution literally right now. That's what made me want to talk about all this is that the first thing that we do when we get involved with anyone, and this goes for folks who we've been talking about, dental companies and
yep,
stuff like that.
Yep, construction. Yeah.
Anyone who has an overarching formal security plan that they need to implement, the first thing that we do when we get involved, usually before we sign any contracts or anything, mm-hmm. is see where they are within those restraints. Mm. And we want to make sure that if there is, in this case, the 4557, if they are compliant to that, or if they fall under that, then they are compliant to it. And if they're not, we have a written plan before we ever get started.
You know what to do.
As to what we'll do. And we get that done as quickly as possible so they're as secure as possible.
So if there is, well, I guess what size of business, I gotta think if you're a, does this apply to banks too?
Oh, it applies to everyone. Any, this, the 4557 literally applies to anyone who handles any taxpayer information.
So it's
personal identifiable information to include things like the social security number mm-hmm. that can be used for taxpayer information.
So
the main folks who use it and are withholden by it are the, like you said, CPAs, bookkeepers, accountants.
And that can be a 2-person shop or a 20-person shop or wherever, regardless?
It can be a 2-person shop. It can be the thousands of people who work at the IRS itself. It's just the federal government's recommendations.
Yeah, but and like you said, if you don't,
right? Well,
it'll crush you.
Well, that's the thing is, if there is an incident within a financial institution where a person's taxpayer information is breached, mm-hmm. they by law have to report that, and part of that reporting goes to the federal government. And what they do is they turn around, do an investigation, and if there's anything on this list that isn't checked, they figure out why. And if it's negligence, then there's, you know, all the things that come hand in hand with that.
So I asked you questions and you were going to go and look at the checklist. Go over a couple of those just so everybody listens and goes, oh, shoot, that's me. Because that's probably happening.
Hopefully not. But for example, and it's broken down by section. Like I
just give me like a couple, five.
Sure. For example, you maintain up-to-date and appropriate programs and controls to prevent unauthorized access to customer information. This includes things such as using antivirus and anti-spyware software that updates automatically.
Check. Why does your voice change when you read?
Because I'm trying to do my reading voice.
Now you know he's got an IRS voice.
That's true.
I can't sleep, Dad. Will you speak to me like an IRS?
But by the way, IRS, if you're looking for any audiobooks being read,
<That's>
this consider this my formal application.
Yeah.
maintaining up-to-date firewalls, particularly if you use broadband internet connection or if you allow employees to connect to the network from remote mm-hmm. sites. Ensure ports that aren't being used are closed. It goes on and on with that. It also gives some suggestions, which aren't necessarily like you need to, but it's good practice. For example.
So as you're reading these and looking for them.
Yeah.
Remember when the whole ADA thing came with websites and people were like literally looking at websites and trying to bust? I imagine, is there a case or cases to where you've got people looking at CPAs, bookkeepers, and asking, and let's say they don't have a firewall, can they get like reported to by the IRS and get hemmed up?
I'm sure. I don't know that there's really a lot of folks out there doing that, but that may just be my own ignorance on the subject.
Is there a fine from the IRS if you get popped with one of those?
There's a broad range of punishments that come from your negligence leading to a breach. Mm. And I believe it varies from fines to prison time. It's a very serious
over recommendations or suggestions.
Yeah, it's
wow. It's, fines or prison.
I mean, the whole works, because there's a difference between, you know, there's you accidentally loaded someone's personal information on a flash drive, dropped the flash drive, and it got reported and turned into some federal institution.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between that happening, because that's negligence that you'll get fined for and probably mm-hmm. lose a lot of business for, mm-hmm. because by law you also have to let your stockholders and your clients know, hey, there was this breach that happened. So, you know, your credibility and your public relations right. immediately dip. There's a big difference between that and, oh no, we don't have anti-malware installed and we got hit by ransomware, lost all of our stuff and 200,000 personnel over 50 different companies mm-hmm. just have all their taxpayer information leaked
gone.
And we don't know who has it. There's a big difference in the both the side effects and the punishments for those, I would imagine.
Dang. So what do you guys do here that I would almost say it's different, because obviously you've got a checklist, right? You have to go. Is that kind of your process, right? So if I'm a bookkeeper, you know, CPA, Campbell CPA, like what's that process you would take me on?
Yeah. So there's a difference between meeting the check marks and actually supporting a business.
That's
because
a good point.
Those check marks are an absolute great starting point. It's for folks who don't know what it is already, which I mean, I've never went to a financial institution where they didn't know what it was already.
Right.
But for anyone who doesn't know, or even anyone outside of the field who just want to see a baseline, how can we get safe?
Mm-hmm.
It is just a great document and a great set of rules to show them and say, hey, this is kind of the, you know, everything that you don't know, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of your baseline.
Right.
And then based on your business, based on your size, how much you make, how much personal information actually flows through here. If you're using a network, if you're using cloud, based on all these different factors, we'll have you meet these baselines.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we'll build you up to be more secure in the places where you need it.
And you manage everything in between there.
Yeah, yeah.
God, that makes sense.
For example, we don't directly train your employees, but we help you get the resources you need to do that. We tell you what they need to do to be within regulations, and we can offer suggestions and even, you know, give you those resources yourself.
Mm-hmm. I can offer a suggestion.
Can I have some more calories?
Yeah, you blew through that fast.
Yeah, when we start talking IRS, I gotta go. Love you, IRS, but don't. So Adrian, what have you cooked with this before?
No, actually, I kind of forgot about this in my collection. But I was reorganizing my bottles a few weeks ago.
Can you say that again? But
yeah.
Enunciate bottles. Because it didn't sound like that.
Bottles?
No, a couple weeks ago I was organizing my balls.
Oh.
That doesn't seem like it would be too hard to do. One goes on one side, one goes on the other.
Now, I was rearranging the collection, and I forgot about this one. I'm like, oh, this would be a good one to have on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And for those that don't know, Adrian has on rough estimate or account,
323.
That nobody's counting, right?
Bottles. So much for that rough estimate.
Yeah, fine spirits
yeah.
of this nature.
It's not a bad collection. You know, I don't have everything, but...
Yeah. I always find it so interesting. Not interesting. I found it funny that we call our alcohol cash, really, a collection, because you drink it, you consume it. Like a collection to me is not like shoes, right? I don't eat shoes. They stay there forever. I'm a sneakerhead. So I just think it's...
I suppose. I think it's something of value.
And totally.
Here in value.
I have one.
But does one not consume the emotions and the thoughts that you have looking at a piece of art?
Well played. Well played.
I've eaten a painting once.
Yeah. Oh, I was high.
That's called figurative speech.
Oh, no.
Oh,
what
gosh.
Have I just said that's been recorded?
Adrian, when it comes to this whole, like, I forget it, whatever, 557, 4557.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. I don't know. You guys know. Like, what are some scenarios? Have you actually seen a company in the finance space come to you and go, oh, crap, we just got popped?
Not to my knowledge in our history,
mm-hmm.
But we've had clients be very, very much scared of getting popped because they've known someone who has.
Yeah.
So it's always,
And that's the thing that's scary within the finance space. We made the jokes about, you know, varying punishments. But if honestly, as, because most CPAs and stuff, they're small businesses. They're between the 2 and 50 employees where we mark as a small business.
Yeah, sure.
That being said, if you are a small tax company and you get a breach to the point where you have to report it and let your clients know and everything like that, it is...
It can shut you down?
Very often.
Oh, my God.
Vast majority, I would even say, just because at that point in time, I mean, I would assume your licenses and things like that are also at jeopardy because you let something like this happen. It's a very, very big deal within the financial space.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say more than in the medical space because, you know, obviously that's not true, but it's very different. And well, if you're running a business as opposed to a medical facility and your business puts so many people in jeopardy, the consequences are often more severe.
Oh, 100%. And it's not like, I mean, you guys do managed services. You're a managed service provider. So the levers and pulleys are going to be the same, but the implication to the business and the space that they're in could vary.
And their customers,
Right.
I mean, luckily for us, though, I mean, our internal standards when we onboard a client and continue to manage them, they're typically more stringent than the four or five.
Five, seven. Our baseline configuration, and it's why we've been able to work so well with financial institutions and medical institutions, is that our baseline, where we like to keep our clients that we have as that we are the managed service provider for, we have stricter guidelines, if you will.
So for those listening, like I said, go back to the CPA, the bookkeeper, whatever, in any, you know, small, medium town in, you know, America, what's, like, let's say four things that you would say, hey, after you listen to this episode, go do right now to make sure you're compliant?
Yeah. So four things I would recommend you do, and I'm going to recommend these not because they're the most important, but because the ones that we see people lax on so much.
Yeah.
First,
it's like the potholes in there. You're like, don't step in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So first thing I'm going to say is passwords. So this is something that's very interesting, is there's, you know, within the IRS, it is... You're supposed to have different passwords for everything. And everyone is supposed to have different passwords, and each of these passwords have to be within the character and special character and letter and number limit. I believe for a standard user, it's supposed to be at least 8 characters using uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and special characters.
Mm.
All of them have to be different. All of them have to be unique. If Jerry has an account, and he also has a program, and he also has a web app, he should have different passwords for all of them.
So that's a diagnostic. When they call you, they go, tell me about your passwords. They're like, yeah, we have one for everything. You're like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Check.
In fact, when we get on as administrators, we usually, we gain access to password lists, either hearing it from people or through a password manager sort of thing, through secure means. We look at the passwords within the organizations, find the ones that are flawed, or the duplicates, et cetera.
Mm.
And then
clean it up.
And we clean it up. We change it. We just make sure, because it's also the forgotten passwords that get people, you know.
Seriously.
It's there's a wide range. So make sure your passwords are good. Secondly, and kind of in that same junction, is make sure you understand who has the correct accounts. Within the finance space, it becomes very important to know who has standard user accounts and who has administrative accounts.
Ah, gotcha.
Because administrative accounts, by definition, have even stricter guidelines. Your passwords need to be 16 characters long instead of the 8, and also have to be unique. That's why when we get involved, we usually just, as a baseline, put everyone in the organization as a standard user and wait for things to break. As things break, we promote people if it's necessary.
Or fire them. Or recommend that they be fired. Because that's what you guys do. You recommend solutions. Like, Timmy over there should be fired.
I mean, if they're like the IRS's recommendations, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But, you know, just making sure that you're very aware of, you know, who your admins are. You make sure that, you know, your admins are who they're supposed to be. You're not just giving...
You always have one.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So third, when you are getting ready to fire someone and this is something that actually happens, when you're getting ready to fire someone, disable all of their accounts before you tell them. It's a good thing you don't need to delete everything, but maybe change their password, lock them out. They come to complain to you about, hey, I just got locked out of my stuff. So you say, take a seat. We need to talk. I can't tell you how many times I've read about companies having issues because they said, hey, Johnny, I'm sorry, but, you know, your time with us is coming to an end. We're going to have to ask you to pack up your desk. Yeah. And on their way to pack up their desk, they can say, okay, print out a customer sheet or something along those lines.
And sell it.
And yeah.
It's happened before, like, oh, but you can finish out your day if you want to get your
day
hours in. Oh, okay.
Print out the character. Right. And that is the, you know, best case scenario is they're bringing stuff to poach elsewhere. Worst case scenario is they're, you know, taking down all your securities stuff so that you're just vulnerable just out of spite.
And that happens. There's some pissed off people around here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people get pissed. I mean, it's their livelihood, you know.
Or like intention to try to get crypto.
Hey,
data.
Hey, is that Nigerian prince still needing support?
Yeah. I got some Ethereum that says you're good. All right, number four.
Training your folks. Well, if it's just a quick thing, I'll say make sure your folks understand phishing scams. If we're just going on one quick thing, make sure that if you don't have training in place, make sure they've either signed a memo or a document that just says that they understand what it is. That way you make sure that you don't have anyone who's just slipped through the cracks who's going to click on that bad email.
That sounds like such a no-brainer that the IRS
They're pretty good. Like, I just got one 2 days ago, and I sent it to the ad. And I knew his response. It looked pretty official. It was from Microsoft saying, your email account on Office 365 is set to expire in the next 2 days. Please sign in and
as soon as you click that link,
to renew.
It's not even that. So within financial institutions, I mean, we've talked about phishing schemes before.
Yeah.
Within financial institutions, it's getting that back door in. Because if it's set up right, those computers have their security, but then everything inside also has its own compartmentalized security.
Mm-hmm.
So even if one is broken into, the rest are still safe. That isn't always the case, and they're looking for those. So they get the back door into the computer, and they just test it out. Jump from computer to computer if it's within an open network, and just see what they can grab. And so you won't often even know that anything went wrong if you got successfully phished, because you just click on a link or click on something, allow something permissions, and then you never hear from it again. A lot of times you don't need to put in a password, don't need to log into anything.
You just
click on a link and there's an executable in your files and, you know, you're boned.
That's the MSP technical term for screwed. You're going to have a problem.
Yeah. So just, you know, make sure that those things are just, I mean, and it's, we just talked about four things out of maybe 100.
That's on the checklist.
And so it's hard to say, well, just check those and see if you're okay. Cause it goes so much deeper than that.
Well, I think a big one is the training. I mean, yes, banks have training, like large institution, private, whatever. But if you are, again, a 2 to 5 or 20 person CPA, especially around tax time, guess what you're probably not doing?
Yeah.
Training.
Yeah.
You're hustling to get client work done.
And not only that, but when you rush, things can get messy as far as security goes. And not only that, there's a lot of new hires, especially nowadays with everything going on in the world with quarantine coming out of it and mm-hmm. everything like that. A lot of people are working remotely or coming back from working remotely. A lot of financial institutions, unfortunately, didn't make it. So people are looking for new places to work.
Right.
So as you're hiring new people, it just feels, okay, you have experience with all this? Great. And you kind of take it for granted that they know the security side as well. Mm-hmm. And it's not always the case. And not everywhere is doing those, hey, welcome to the firm. Here's your initial training. And we'll go over it every year to make sure you're up to date. Just so many people aren't doing that when they're supposed to.
Right. Dang. Well, Adrian, anything to add besides this tasty?
That's pretty good bourbon. No, I think Ethan spoke well of, you know, some points.
Well, I didn't speak well, but I got a lot of it out there, so maybe some of it will stick.
You shared some information.
Well, yeah. And here's the thing. I definitely got the short end of the stick today because you know, I did a bit of time talking, but while I was talking, you guys were back there just sipping on your drinks and just waiting.
All right,
rude. I'll give a little more info. So it's a 12-year-old. What's kind of cool about this, though, is that this is called a single rack bourbon.
What does that mean?
Not single barrel, not barrel strength, not small batch. I mean, it is a batch, but they literally picked a center rack. So I think this one, it varies from batch to batch. This was 19 barrels. So the 19 barrels were on the same rack horizontally.
Mm.
So they have a very similar profile. So that's kind of cool. I've never really seen that before.
Do things like humidity and heat and things like that vary much from rack to rack in these warehouses? Yeah.
I would think like...
from bottom to top, depending on the time of the year throughout the day, there could be a 40-degree variance.
Jeez. Between the top of a cellar
or... A rick house to the bottom.
Now, when they go and do that on the middle, is there a time when they put that thing down and then they flip it and reverse it?
Some rotate barrels, like Maker's Mark does, but most of them don't. It's really expensive to do.
Do they do that to try to have more consistency?
Yeah, so you can start something out high and then bring it back low and age it a little longer, mm-hmm. or vice versa.
So do they actually age them within the barrels for different amounts of time to get that profile based on where... That's really... I didn't know that.
The Maker's
That's
Mark cool. is like six to 7 years is their sweet spot, but it has a softer taste, more like a 8 year plus, because they're able to take advantage of using a colder environment for being in the bottom of the rack, rickhouse, and then, but do either way, wind up on top too, where they get hot.
Is that why a lot of whiskeys, or bourbons anyway, don't say how long they've been aged? Because it varies
much? Small batches for a profile, the master distiller or the tasters were basically, or mainly the master distiller, that's kind of the art form, because you'd be like, okay, what are we making today? Okay, Booker's. So you got Jim Beam and your friend now. You're like, okay, Booker's. Okay. So these are the rick houses we choose from Booker's typically. We do so many barrels from the top left, so many from the bottom, you know, the middle center.
Right
center. And then like so many from like the bottom left.
Man.
And then they put it together in a batch, and if they have to fine tune it, they will. But, you know, they kind of have that art form.
That's crazy.
Typically the barrels are in a particular rick house at different altitudes because there's hills in Kentucky, right?
Right.
So ones that are higher get even hotter. One's lower in the valley down.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, it's very different. Like, see,
that's crazy. Cause when I think about them making bourbon, especially the master distiller, his job is with like figuring out what goes in the mash and things like that. And all of it, everything that goes into the barrel, you don't really think
of. Old school master distillers used to actually distill. Nowadays, it's all automated.
Sure.
Program. So there's people like in a room, basically a bunch of guys on computers just looking at levels.
Okay.
Until the next portion of the production line is going to take place, they kind of just pass it off, right?
Yeah, you don't really think about what happens after it's in the barrel. Like it ages.
Master distiller is mainly tasting, and
God, what a profile. What a job! I got into the wrong line of work.
You should say MSD, Master Service Distiller.
Yeah. There's also a Master Taster. That's my dream job.
Oh, sounds like a career.
I feel like you have to have, what is that called when you have the super sensitive palate where you can, you know, be all snooty about wine and shit?
Super Taster?
That's not the word I was thinking. Thank you. The sommelier.
But that's for wine. They don't say the same thing for whiskey, do they?
Do they?
There's whiskey sommeliers.
But they're still called sommeliers. It's not like another word.
Some might say whiskey expert level. Like, it really depends. Like, the W set, which traditionally used to be wine, like their version of sommelier programs, and now has a spirits program.
You know how karate, there's different belts? We should make something up and get it marketed to where you have, like, wristbands. You're like, oh, he's a black wristband.
Yeah.
He really knows his stuff. All right, everybody, there you have it. Hopefully this was educational. There was a lot of stuff that actually I didn't know, which coincidentally needs to get out to the world, because I imagine there's a lot of people that just do not know this stuff. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You learned a little bit about this tax code. Of course, we learned the barrels are on racks. Yeah, pretty tasty. All right, everybody, you guys be good. We will see you at the next episode.